Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, demand for natural gas is expected to be higher than the demand for coal by the year 2030. The International Energy Agency reported on Tuesday that 12 years from now, gas will be the world's second largest energy fuel after oil. This would be a result of efforts to reduce air pollution and increased use of liquefied natural gas, the agency predicted. The IEA report said that energy demand would grow by more than 25% between 2017 and 2040 if people use energy more efficiently. Demand would rise by at least 50% without such improvements, it added. The estimates are based on the IEA's new policies scenario model. It considers legislation and policies to reduce pollution and fight climate change. The estimates also consider more energy efficiencies in fuel use, buildings, and other things. The report said, "Natural gas is the fastest growing fossil fuel in the new policies scenario, overtaking coal by 2030 to become the second largest energy after oil." China is currently the biggest oil and coal importer in the world. It would soon become the largest importer of gas, the IEA predicted. The report said that the level of Chinese imports would be similar to those of the European Union by 2040. The Reuters news agency examined information from China's General Administration of Customs. Reuters found that China is already importing more natural gas than Japan, the world's top importer of gas. China is the world's third biggest user of natural gas, following the United States and Russia. China imports about 40% of its natural gas because local production cannot provide as much as the country needs.
A United States official says a new trade agreement with Japan is the best way to deal with a trade imbalance between the two countries. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence made the statement during a visit Tuesday to Tokyo. He spoke at a joint press conference with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. Pence pressed for a new U.S. trade deal with Japan. American products and services too often face barriers to compete fairly in Japanese markets, Pence said. He called on the two sides to negotiate a new trade deal that will be, in his words, a model for other nations. U.S. President Donald Trump and his administration have criticized existing trade agreements with Japan and other allies. Trump has said these agreements are not fair or balanced. Trump has expressed dissatisfaction with Japan's $69 billion trade surplus with the U.S. He accuses Japan of setting up barriers to imports of U.S. automobiles and agriculture. Japanese officials say the country's markets are open. However, the Japanese government does protect some farm products. The government has been unwilling to negotiate a bilateral free trade deal. It also has hoped that the United States would return to the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement with Japan and 10 other nations. After speaking with reporters, both Pence and Abe traveled to Singapore for a meeting of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. During their Tokyo meeting, the two men talked about efforts to remove nuclear weapons from the Korean Peninsula. Pence praised Abe for providing leadership while working with U.S. and South Korean officials to make progress on the issue. Last week, North Korea canceled planned talks with U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. However, the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, said those would likely take place at a later date. Haley also said she expects President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un to meet early next year. On Sunday, a U.S.-based research group said it had identified at least 13 North Korean missile bases that the North has yet to declare. The Center for Strategic and International Studies prepared a report on the missile sites. In Washington, Trump criticized a New York Times newspaper report on the findings. "We fully know about the sites being discussed. Nothing new. And nothing happening out of the normal," Trump wrote in a message on Twitter. He added, "I will be the first to let you know if things go bad." I'm Mario Ritter.
The number of new international students attending American colleges and universities has dropped for the second straight year. Newly arriving foreign students fell about 7% in the 2017-2018 school year, a not-for-profit research group found. The number of students dropped to about 271,000. The latest decrease followed a 3% drop during the 2016-2017 school year. The information was released Tuesday in the 2018 Open Doors Report on International Educational Exchange. The report is a project of the New York-based Institute of International Education, or IIE, and the U.S. Department of State. The report said sharper competition from schools in other nations, for example Australia and Canada, was a major reason for the drop in international students coming to the U.S. It also said rising education costs in the U.S. compared to other countries played a big part. international students have more choices than ever before on where to pursue higher education, said IIE President Alan Goodman in a statement. The organization largely dismissed the opinion of some education experts that the decrease is linked to statements and policies of the current U.S. administration on immigration issues. We're not hearing that students feel they can't come here. We're hearing that they have choices, Goodman told reporters while discussing report results. For the first time, we have real competition, he said. Carrie Jensen is an administrator who works with international students at the University of Rochester in New York. He told Reuters he believes there are other reasons for the drop in students besides increased competition. He said a major issue currently facing American universities is the lack of clear and steady policies by the current U.S. administration. One of those policies was a travel ban ordered by President Donald Trump on people from several Muslim-majority nations. In addition, U.S. officials have said they plan to seek a new limit on how long international students will be permitted to stay in the U.S. Currently, students can stay as long as they are continuing their studies. Jensen said such proposals and policies have created an overall political environment seen as unfriendly to immigrants and foreigners. That has kind of been the worst part of this, the uncertainty, Jensen said. That breeds fear, and people tend to overreact. Doug Rand is a former official who worked on immigration issues for former President Barack Obama. He said he believes the current situation is not a welcoming environment for foreign students interested in studying in the U.S. Rand called it an act of willful ignorance to suggest U.S. immigration policies are not having a direct effect on foreign student numbers. He noted that the Trump administration has moved to restrict the number of skilled worker visas and permanent residency permits. Many incoming international students would be seeking such approvals in the future. Caroline Casagrande is a State Department official in the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. She told reporters the flattening of international student attendance actually began with the 2015-2016 year before the start of the Trump administration. That year, the number of new international students rose by 2.4% compared to the previous year. Casagrande said she found it unwarranted for people to say that the continued drops are completely the result of a political environment. The latest Open Doors report did find that overall, the total number of international students increased slightly during the 2017-2018 school year. The 1.5 rise meant the total number of international students in the U.S. during the period passed 1 million for the third straight year. Similar to in the past, the largest numbers of students last year came from China, India, and South Korea. The three countries combined made up 56% of all international students. The top school for international students was New York University. This was followed by the University of Southern California in Los Angeles. At number three was Boston's Northeastern University, followed by Columbia University in New York City. I'm Brian Lynn.
For years, our American history series, The Making of a Nation, has been one of the most popular programs from VOA Learning English. The series started in 1969. Today, we start our series again from the beginning. Generations of school children have been taught that Christopher Columbus discovered the New World. In fact, the second Monday in October is celebrated as a national holiday to honor the European explorer. But October also has a lesser-known observance. October 9th is Leif Erikson Day. So, who was Leif Erikson? Today, Steve Ember tells us about him and other early European explorers.
Leif Erikson was a Norse explorer who sailed around the northeastern coast of what we now call North America about 1,000 years ago. He and his crew returned to Greenland with news of a place he called Vinland. Following his explorations, a few settlements were built. Experts digging in eastern Canada in the 1960s found the remains of a village with houses like those in Greenland, Iceland, and Norway. But the Norse did not establish any permanent settlements in North America. Today, as we relaunch our series, we begin with the story of early European explorers in North America. In the 11th century, Europe was beginning a period of great change. One reason was the religious wars known as the Crusades. These were military campaigns by Christians to force Muslims out of the Holy Land in the Middle East. The Crusades began at the end of the 11th century. They continued for about 200 years. One effect of the presence of European armies in the Middle East was to increase trade. This trade was controlled by businessmen in Venice and other city-states in Italy. The businessmen earned large profits by supplying the warring armies and by bringing goods from the East into Europe. When the European crusaders returned home, they brought with them some new and useful products. These included spices, perfumes, silk cloth, and steel products. These goods became highly valued all over Europe. The increased trade with the East led to the creation and growth of towns along the supply roads. It also created a large number of rich European businessmen. The European nations were growing. They developed armies and governments. These had to be paid for with taxes collected from the people. By the 15th century, European countries were ready to explore new parts of the world. The first explorers were the Portuguese. By 1400, they wanted to control the eastern spice trade. European businessmen did not want to continue paying Venetian and Arab traders for their costly spices. They wanted to set up trade themselves. If they could sail to Asia directly for these products, the resulting trade would bring huge profits. The leader of Portugal's exploration efforts was Prince Henry, a son of King John I. He was interested in sea travel and exploration. He became known as Henry the Navigator. Prince Henry brought experts to his country and studied the sciences involved in exploration. He built an observatory to study the stars. Portuguese sea captains sailed their ships down the west coast of Africa, hoping to find a path to India and East Asia. They finally found the end of the African continent, the area called the Cape of Good Hope. It took the Portuguese only about 50 years to take control of the spice trade. They established trading colonies in Africa, the Persian Gulf, India, and China. Improvements in technology helped them succeed. One improvement was a new kind of ship. It could sail more easily through storms and winds. Other inventions, like the compass, allowed them to sail out of sight of land. The Portuguese also armed their ships with modern cannon. They used these weapons to battle Muslim and East Asian traders. The other European nations would not let Portugal control this spice trade for long, however. Spain's Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand agreed to provide ships, crew, and supplies for an exploration by an Italian named Christopher Columbus. Columbus thought the shortest way to reach the East was to sail west across the Atlantic Ocean. He was right, but he also was wrong. He believed the world was much smaller than it is. He did not imagine the existence of another continent and another huge ocean between Europe and East Asia. Columbus and a crew of 88 men left Spain on August 3, 1492, in three ships, the Niña, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. By October 12th, the sailors stood on land again on an island that Columbus named San Salvador. He explored the island and the nearby islands of what are now known as Cuba and Hispaniola. He believed they were part of the coast of East Asia, which was then called the Indies. He called the people he found there Indians. Columbus left about 40 men on San Salvador Island to build a fort from the wood of one of the ships. He returned to Spain with birds, plants, gold, and people captured from the land he explored. Columbus was welcomed as a hero when he returned to Spain in March of 1493. Columbus sailed again across the Atlantic to the Caribbean 5 months later. He found that the fort built by his men had been destroyed by fire. Columbus did not find any of his men. But this time, he had many more men and all the animals and equipment needed to start a colony on Hispaniola. 7 months later, he sent five ships back to Spain. They carried Indians to be sold as slaves. Columbus himself also returned to Spain. Columbus made another trip in 1498. This time, he saw the coast of South America. But the settlers on Hispaniola were so unhappy with conditions in their new colony, they sent Columbus back to Spain as a prisoner. Spain's rulers pardoned him. In 1502, Columbus made his final voyage to what some by then were calling the New World. He stayed on the island of Jamaica until he returned home 2 years later. During all his trips, Columbus explored islands and waterways, searching for that passage to the Indies. He never found it, nor did he find spices or great amounts of gold. Yet he always believed that he had found the Indies. He refused to recognize that it really was a new world. Evidence of this was all around him. Strange plants unknown in either Europe or Asia, and a different people who did not understand any language spoken in the East. Columbus's voyages, however, opened up the New World. Others later explored all of North America. Now, you may be wondering about the name of this new land. If Christopher Columbus led the explorations, then why is it called America? The answer lies with the name of another Italian explorer, Amerigo Vespucci. He visited the coast of South America in 1499. He wrote stories about his experiences that were widely read in Europe. In 1507, a German mapmaker, Martin Waldseemüller, read Vespucci's stories. He decided that the writer had discovered the New World and thought it should be called America in his honor. And so it was. Spanish explorers sought to find gold and power in the New World. They also wanted to spread Christianity, which they considered the only true religion. The first of these Spanish explorers was Juan Ponce de León. He landed in North America in 1513. He explored the eastern coast of what is now the state of Florida. He was searching for a special kind of water that Europeans believed existed. They believed that this water could make old people young again. Ponce de León never did find the Fountain of Youth. Also in 1513, Vasco Núñez de Balboa crossed the Isthmus of Panama and reached the Pacific Ocean. In 1519, Hernán Cortés landed an army in Mexico. His army destroyed the ancient empire of the Aztec Indians. That same year, Ferdinand Magellan began his 3-year voyage around the world. And in the 1530s, the forces of Francisco Pizarro destroyed the Inca Indian Empire in Peru. 10 years later, Francisco Vázquez de Coronado had marched as far north as what is now the American state of Kansas, and then west to the Grand Canyon. About the same time, Hernando de Soto reached the Mississippi River. 50 years after Columbus first landed at San Salvador, Spain claimed a huge area of America. The riches of these new lands made Spain the greatest power in Europe and the world.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.